Veterans salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24 month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Animal Matters is Charlotte Rea's diary of real-life cases written during a 1 year of her work as a veterinary surgeon in a 24-hour inner-city London animal charity. She's here to tell us all about it. Welcome to the show, Charlotte.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
So was this all part of your training then to work in this charity?
We did actually have a stint working in charity, the charity hospital, when I was at university. I chose when I'd graduated to go and work for a charity. So the working since I graduated wasn't part of my training. That was my choice.
And I believe that you you kept diaries, so you looked back one day and thought, well, I can make a book out of this.
I did, yeah. I've always been a diary writer. I've always found it quite therapeutic. Even when I was a little child, I would scribble away what I'd been up to that day. And I found that when during the particularly difficult work days, I would get home and I would write down and some of my thoughts about the cases that I'd seen that day. And then I looked at them all one day and I thought perhaps I should write these into a memoir.
Yeah, great idea.
Yeah.
The thing is, there must have been some really difficult days. I mean, some pets, you know, these are people's loved ones. They're like their children. And to have to say goodbye, were you there at a lot of those times?
A lot of them, yeah. I'm there at some of the happiest times when people bring their puppy in for the first health check when they're only a couple of months old. And then there at the end at some of the most saddest, most poignant moments, which is, a privilege in some ways to be a part of that moment, but it can be terribly sad.
And now, presumably, as a fully fledged vet, you have to actually administer sort of their last rites, I guess is the nice way of putting it.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I think actually it can be almost a relief because obviously a lot of the animals that I put to sleep are at the end of their life and have been poorly maybe for some time. And, you know, owners have been coming to terms with the fact that they're going to be saying goodbye. And then when it finally happens, there can be a sense of peace, actually.
Yeah.
But it's obviously still very sad.
No, I get that. I mean, with my Westie quite a few years ago, you know, she was very, very poorly. She was 16. And I was being selfish, I felt, at the end by keeping her alive because I was keeping her alive for me. She wasn't happy.
Yeah. I think, you know, no amount of time with them is ever enough, is it?
No.
I mean, you just want one more day, but at some point, you know, you have to make that decision.
Yeah, and I guess you as a person have to be quite a compassionate person because you have to be there for the people once the pet's passed on.
Yeah, it can be difficult at times not to take on the emotion, but, you know, because we all have pets as well. Everyone I work with has pets and, you know, we really understand that bond and how difficult it can be to say goodbye. But at the same time, I think you have to have an edge of sort of being detached. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to get through the day.
Yeah. And do you ever have problems because you form too much of a bond? I mean, if a pet has to be with you all the time or at the vets for like a number of weeks, is it difficult to then let them go back to their owners?
It's never difficult to let them go back to their owner. What can be difficult is, staying completely impartial if you become quite attached to, you know, an animal that's been staying in for a little while and you've been looking after them every day. It can be difficult if you're trying to make a decision about sort of which direction to go in, especially if you're making a euthanasia decision. But that's where you just have to sort of funnel all of your training into your decision and try and stay objective.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about something a bit more fun, because there's some fun parts of the book, like for example, once when you had to try and catch an escaped budgie.
Yes, that was my very first consultation on my first day as a vet, so it really stood out to me. It was slightly unfortunate because where I work, we have double consultation rooms. So there's a sort of partition wall, but essentially there's an area where you can go in between the two consultation rooms. And next door was one of my colleagues with a three-legged cat. So I was treating a bird, which you know, isn't my area of expertise, let's say. And the bird promptly started flying around the room, and the cat then started chasing the bird.
Oh,
and I was
no.
trying to sort of maintain control of the situation. So it was very funny. The budgie was absolutely fine at the end of it, I might add.
Oh, that's good. And the three-legged cat?
Three-legged cat was also fine. They're probably a little upset that he didn't manage to catch the bird.
And another situation, an unusual Dalmatian. What was that all about?
Yes, well, we do see animals, particularly dogs, in quite frequently, who have been purchased online and owners have been told that they're certain breeds, and then they turn out to be a completely different breed. So this dog was sold as a little male Dalmatian, came in and was a Staffordshire Bull Terrier with black spots, and ended up actually also being a little female dog. So I think the owner was a little bit surprised by the end of the consultation that everything had turned on its head.
A staffy with spots, is that unusual?
It is quite unusual. They can have markings that sort of spotty markings, a little bit like a dairy cow. but this one did, I have to say, did look body-wise and marking-wise a little bit like a Dalmatian, but it was an unmistakable staffy head. Very cute nonetheless. I do love staffies.
I'll bet. Is that the same staffy that was called Freddy, the 8-year-old staffy called Freddy?
No, that was Max, who I suggested they call Maxine.
Ah, so who was the 8-year-old staffy called Freddy then?
Who's that?
Sure. This was in, I'll tell you what this was in, an article in, I think, The Times. It says an 8-year-old unneutered staffy called Freddie. You recommended castrating Freddie had a hip condition.
Yes, that was a different dog. There's so many of them. So Freddie was another sort of classic story for us, which is a male owner that didn't want to get his dog castrated. I think a lot of male owners feel that it's almost like their own manhood is being questioned when we discuss castration. So he had a hip condition, hip dysplasia, which is where the hip's not properly in the socket. It can be very painful and cause arthritis. And we tend to recommend against breeding from any dogs that have inherited conditions like that. So I was trying to discuss castration with him, but the owner was very very much against the idea of him having his manhood taken away.
I'm sure. Why do they take it so personally? And I've got here, I don't know if you remember this one, a TV star with cancer. Was that the animal?
Yes, that was the animal, yes. So that was a little dog who used to be in various sort of TV clips and adverts and things like that, and had cancer on her face, very sadly. And we had her into the hospital, and I biopsied the lump just to find out what it was. And I was trying to discuss with the owner the fact that, very sadly, it had come back as a cancerous lump. But the owner was very distracted and preoccupied by the fact that we'd clipped the fur on her face, which might hinder her acting career.
So that's
something we come across quite often, where you're sort of trying to impart some quite serious information to an owner about their pet, and they're very focused on something much more trivial, like whether their nails have been cut while they were under the anaesthetic or things like that.
That's terrible. And you also look into RSPCA welfare cases?
We do, yes. We work quite closely with the RSPCA. I've seen quite a number of cases over the years of animals that have been mistreated. If we feel that an animal has been poorly treated by an owner to the point of needing to be taken away from that owner and taken out of that household, then we inform RSPCA officers who do have the power to seize the animal and keep them away from the owner until a court case has taken place.
Yeah.
You know, if it gets to that point.
Yeah. And what about the law on dangerous dogs? I always feel a bit, you know, I sometimes think it's more the owners than the dog the law should be there for.
The law on dangerous dogs is slightly controversial. It came in 1991 and it's mainly preoccupied with Section 1 dogs, which are dogs that are classed as pit bull type, and there's three other breeds as well. And if they are measured up to be a certain type of dog, then they will be put to sleep, unfortunately. So that's something that I discuss in the book, it doesn't really work very well, that law, in the sense that dogs who have a perfectly pleasant, amenable personality, who would make lovely, loving, caring family dogs, can be put to sleep simply based on body measurements and not based on their behaviour.
No, that's
so that's something
wrong
that we've been campaigning to change.
Oh, that's good. Well done, you. That's actually quite disturbing.
Yeah, it is very upsetting. You know, everyone who works at in animal charity practice is very anti that law. We are hoping that eventually it might be changed somehow to protect the public as well, because at the moment, putting to sleep animals based on how they appear but how they look doesn't protect the public. We need to be basing it on animals' behaviour, not on their appearance.
Yes, of course we should. And ethical concerns around pedigree dog breeding. Do you agree or disagree with pedigree dog breeding?
My biggest preoccupation is animal welfare, and I just really want animals to live healthy a life as possible. So when it comes to pedigree dog breeding and crusts and things like that, I want dogs to be bred responsibly, and I think that would hugely improve a lot of situations where dogs are actually suffering because they've been bred to have facial abnormalities and squashed noses or hip dysplasia and these sorts of genetic components that we could actually avoid with careful breeding.
It's awful when you see these poor dogs that literally can barely breathe because of the, they bred for the way they might look cuter.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we all love a cute dog. Who doesn't? And I absolutely adore, pugs and French bulldogs and bulldogs. I think some of them have such cute, loving personalities, and a lot of their owners are very conscientious and, want them to have the best lives possible. But something has gone wrong somewhere along the line,
yeah,
and a lot of these dogs are suffering. And I think we all need to sort of educate ourselves a bit more about them and make sure that if that's our choice of breed and we're going to go out and purchase one, make sure that we understand, the potential health ailments that they could get.
Yeah, I agree. And it says that in the book you also discuss contemporary issues in veterinary medicine, such as animal euthanasia. Now, presumably we're agreed on the fact that animals should be put to sleep if they're suffering.
Yes, that is true from a rational viewpoint. I think part of the problem is that when owners are very attached to their pets, particularly some of our clients who can be more vulnerable working in charity practice, they find it very difficult to say goodbye. And sometimes it can be quite hard to persuade an owner that actually their pet is suffering and that they're extremely poorly and that it's time to let go. So those can be some of the most difficult cases for us vets, is trying to get to a point with an owner where they're able to say goodbye whilst meanwhile watching their pet suffering for sometimes days or weeks.
Well, finally, what do you do in this situation? You've got somebody that comes to your vets and they love their animal and they want their animal treated, but they can't afford the vet's bills. What happens then?
Well, in the UK, we're quite lucky to have animal charities, which are, we don't have them in many other places across the world. So luckily, we do have facilities several different animal welfare charities available for people who are either on low incomes or on means-tested benefits. Obviously, if you don't fall within those criteria, then you are expected to pay vet bills, which can be difficult. But it's part of the responsibility of owning a pet, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Well, it must be a really, really rewarding job for you. When did you actually graduate?
2008.
Ah, oh, brilliant. So, oh, you've been doing it.
A decade ago now.
Yeah, you've been doing it a while now. And you're at a regular vet's, are you?
Yeah, well, I'm at a charity vet.
Right.
Working in central London.
Wonderful.
So we see sort of poorer members of society.
Oh, bless you.
I love it. I feel privileged to be doing the job.
Yeah, quite right too. Well, the book looks great. It's called Animal Matters, Diary of an Inner City Vet by Charlotte Rea, who we're speaking to now. I'm just looking at the date because this is a pre-recorded interview. The 21st of February it's out, so that's round about now, isn't it?
That's tomorrow, yes.
By the time this interview goes out, it will be tomorrow. So we implore everyone to go out and buy it. Thank you very much for being on the show, Charlotte Rea.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
CODA salutes those who've served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.